Welcome to our third presentation on introduction to stocks. And in our previous presentation, we talked about the stock markets, although we usually just say stock market. Where are these traded? How does it work? And today we're going to take a look at stock transactions that are more important to you and me as individual investors. We'll take a look at the costs thereof and then end with a little bit of information about where to get good free information. Of course, the best place is the library. So let's get started on slide 36. There are various types of market transactions, stock transactions, but they fall into four major categories. In my humble opinion, the only one you and I need are market orders. But you're going to find people who are interested in limits and stop orders and so let's take a look at them on slide 36. A market order says, look, give me the best price you can find, right? I want to buy 100 shares, go out and buy them. You want to sell 100 shares, go out and sell them. You're going to get the current market price. Whereas a limit order says, no. I'm willing to buy these shares. They're currently selling for $28. But I will only buy them if it goes down to $25. So you are limited to only spending $25. Now, you might spend less if the market price goes below that, but you're not going to spend more than $25. And the same thing happens when you're trying to sell. You know, it's selling for $28, but I don't want to sell for less than $30. Okay, so what's the problem with a limit order? Well, you might never get the stock, right? You say I'll buy 25 and it's 28, and then it goes to 30 and 32, and so and the same thing is true on the sell side, on the reverse side. Now, what are these stop orders? Well, you know, traders use these things. It's sometimes called a stop loss order or stop order. It's like a limit order, but it is triggered into a market order when a certain price is hit. So let's say you had why we call them stop losses, because people often put them on trades that they already have, on positions they already have. So let's look at the dynamic, right? It's selling for 28 and you want to put a stop loss. If it goes below 25, you want to sell it. Okay, I don't want to lose anymore. That's why it's called stop loss. So it becomes a market order. Now, if it goes down to 20, oh well, that's what you're going to get, right? You turned it into a market order. Now, stop limit is similar, but it becomes a limit order. So say you were trying to salvage, you know, you don't want to lose too much money, and you say, okay, I will sell it at 25. Well, if it goes below that, oh well, your trigger is not going to happen. It's going to become a limit order, and then you're only going to sell if it gets back up to 25. Are you confused? Good, because you should stay away from these things, all right, in my humble opinion. And here is a more detailed explanation on slide 37. You know, I just use, personally, I recommend market orders, but short-term traders tell me they prefer limit orders or stop orders on all their trades. And if you watch any of these videos from the traders who are trying to get you to sign up for $50 a month to follow them, they'll show, oh, put a stop right here, put a stop right there, just in case we don't want to lose too much money. Well, as Peter Lynch says, you're guaranteed then to lose. But hey, maybe you bought it at 10, it's selling for 28, and if it goes below 25, okay, I'll sell. All right, all righty. Yeah, I stick with market orders. You decide. But you should really understand them, okay? So make sure you've gone through the different types, and they're in the study guide. So make sure you understand them, because you're going to be the investment guru. Not yet. You're on your way there, rising investment gurus. And you're going to have to explain to people why stop orders are, you know, mostly for traders and they're not that important to us. Although some people do like limit orders. Slide 38, costs. Well, you know, costs have come down. Yeah, but a lot of the cost now is hidden. Traditionally, you would charge anywhere from 1 to 5%, and the largest portion was the brokerage commission. But deep discount internet brokers have driven the commissions down to as low as $5 a trade. And now Robinhood has been very successful. There were two companies that tried it before them, but they failed. Robinhood now offers free trades, and they've made it into like a video game and trade all you want, it's free. Well, no, it's not. Other brokerage firms have followed them. So is it really a free? No, folks, dude, come on. You're not that gullible, are you, to believe that you're actually paying nothing to Robinhood? The truth is transaction costs have come down substantially, but more and more of the cost is hidden from you, the investor. So let's take a look at this slide 39, where a deep discount internet broker offers trades for $7. But in the fine print that you read when you clicked here to say you've read it, right? The client broker agreement includes a provision for allowing the broker to solely utilize exclusive stock dealers and market makers. What does that mean? Well, look, we're going to see a presentation on the it's about the Casas de Cambios, the money exchange houses on the border with San Isidro, San Diego, and Tijuana. And you're going to see that there's not just one price. I mean, you go on the line, you see one price, but no, the quoted price is simply the best price available. But at any one time, there are dozens of prices quoted as dealers and market makers compete to buy and sell your orders. The chosen dealer doesn't necessarily have the best price, right? So instead of paying $20, that's the price you saw when you went on the internet, the investor might pay $20.05. So you see that $7 commission or $0 commission, but you don't see the extra $5 you paid on a 100-share transaction. So it is much less than it used to be, where, you know, typically $70, $100 or more a trade. Then it went down to $45. That was the discount brokers in the 1970s and 80s and 90s. And then in the internet, we had $18 a trade, $29 a trade, $7, and now $0 a trade. But where are they making their money? Off the spread, the difference between the bid and the ask prices. This is a disclaimer that used to be included in every trade confirmation from Scottrade. Scottrade was bought by TD Ameritrade, and then TD Ameritrade was bought by Schwab. But this is what they would send you on your email confirmation. Scottrade Incorporated receives remuneration for directing orders to particular broker dealers or market centers for execution. Such remuneration is considered compensation to the firm and the source, and the amount of any compensation received by the firm in connection with your transaction will be disclosed upon request. Look, folks, little hint here. Whenever you see a company put everything in large caps and capital letters, you know they're trying to make you think it's important, but they don't want you to read it. Because first of all caps, prose, is hard to read. We use all caps for headlines, but not for prose. Plus, they use words like remuneration. It's a kickback. Why don't they just say it's a kickback? But in Scottrade's defense, at least they prominently disclose this relationship on their email confirmation. Robinhood, on the other hand, brashly declares that they are not making any money from this using this technique. Well, they're lying. Obviously they are. Or at least according to Investopedia and CNBC, which I have a tendency to believe because Investopedia is pretty reliable. I don't really watch CNBC, but I don't think they're trying to lie. I don't know. You decide. But Robinhood really downplays the fact that you are being charged by what is called the spread, order flow, payment for order flow. Doesn't that sound innocuous, order flow? Yeah. And who are the people behind Robinhood? There are these high-frequency traders like Citadel and Virtu and these other companies that do millions of transactions a day. And they're making tiny little piece, charging you 0.01% or whatever, but they're kicking back to Robinhood. That's how they make their money. That's how the commissions are zero, but you're still paying. So I don't want anybody in the class from now on, in any discussion forums or anything, say that their commissions are free, that they're trading for free, all right? No more. Just forget it out of your mind. Slide 41. The SEC says that your broker has a duty to seek the best execution that is reasonably available for its customers' orders. But it's not a guarantee. So read this. The SEC requires brokers dealers to notify their customers if their orders are not routed for best execution. Typically, this disclosure is on the trade confirmation slip you received after placing your order. That's what we just saw from Scott Trade. And determining whether or not a customer got best execution can be very difficult. Here is an example of the Securities and Exchange Commission trying to enforce the rules. This is from a law school, law education website, and not doing a very good job of it. The SEC was outgunned, and they didn't do very well. They weren't able to actually prove it. So the SEC was looking into making costs more transparent, possibly showing the customer the difference between the dealer's price and the best price available at the time of the execution of the transaction, maybe even showing the total cost of the transaction from the markup markdown. In other words, folks, you are being charged. Needless to say, the deep discount brokers cried that it would drive up the cost of commissions and ultimately hurt the consumer, and the proposal died and turned into something else. So it's up to you to check if you are getting the best execution. But how can you, a lone investor, determine if you're getting the best price if even the SEC has trouble watching over the brokerage companies? And the answer is you really can't, right? You could, I guess, call them and say, hey, you know, because Scottrade says all you got to do is ask. And they'll go, what? What do you want? And they won't even know what you're talking about. So what happened? Instead of making it transparent and showing you how much you're really being charged for every transaction, we now, brokers, give a, what's it called? Client something form. In other words, it's a disclosure form that nobody reads because it's all gobbledygook, that basically says, yes, we are charging you, okay? You're paying for our services. What's it called now? I have to give it to every client before we do business. C something or F. Oh, that's going to bug me now. I'll remember it before, right after we're done the presentation. I guess I could go look at it right now. Hang on a minute. Stop. Don't go away. I'm going to pause this. Client relationship summary. That's what it's called. Form CRS. That has a lot of gobbledygook and basically says, if you read it carefully, we are charging you for our services. Yes, you're not getting them for free, unlike what Robinhood jumps up and down and screams and hollers and says you are, even though you're not. Enough said. Slide number 43. high-frequency trading. Speaking of high-frequency trading, there are firms out there that are using computers to transact large number of orders at very fast speeds. Now, there's a book that you really should read. It's a lot of fun, folks. This guy, anything by Michael Lewis is awesome. It's called Flash Boys. Now, it's woefully out of date. He wrote it 2010, 2011, and when it came out in 2012, at the end of the book, he basically said that the technology is moving fast. It's already outgunning what we detail in the book. There is little doubt that high-frequency trading has reduced transaction costs. However, at the same time, high-frequency trading firms have been accused of using their ability to transact at the microsecond level to front-run investors. What does that mean, front-running? It means jumping ahead of you. They see your transaction coming down the pike, and they are fast enough to jump ahead of you, buy the shares at a certain price, turn around and sell them to you at a 0.001 pennies more. They're essentially stealing tiny amounts of money from the average retail investor, and even large players like mutual funds. So in the book Flash Boys, you read about the hero who's not happy about this. He's working for the Royal Bank of Canada, I think. Right, I think it's who he is. And he was fighting to try to figure out what was going on. And all these people around him were going, we don't know. We don't know what's going on. And finally, he started his own exchange, stock exchange called IEX. So look him up. It's a pretty interesting story. It's a great book. Read it. They created what they call a speed bump. They basically looped a fiber cable, like 250 yards or something like that, in a circle. And so the big boys and girls can't get in front of you to try to steal, you know, front run you. And you know, some of the mutual funds and the pension funds and they were on board with this. They helped him get started. They were very unhappy with what was going on. And now I think IEX has about 4% of the trades every day. So if you're at all interested in this, and of course there's a future for you, you don't have to become a stockbroker. You could get involved in the behind the scenes world. And it's very interesting, in my humble opinion. And in the book, it's really interesting. At the very end, he shows how, oops, you know, they're already leapfrogging the technology that they ballyhooed in the book. Now, how much are they stealing? Nobody really knows. But the best guess that Michael Lewis has in the book, and he'll be the first to tell you that they don't really know, is about between 5 and 16 15 billion, 5 and 15 billion, so $9 or $10 billion a year, which to you, that's a lot of money, right? But that's how much is traded on the March NCAA March Madness competition, about $9 billion. So in a 20-some trillion-dollar economy, it's not that much money. And throughout the early 2010s, we were getting notices from the meaning brokers, from the Securities Exchange Commission. We're looking into this. We're on top of it. And then all of a sudden they went silent. And I think what they did is they probably said, look, we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. You ever heard that phrase? These high frequency trading has reduced costs drastically. So what if they're taking a little bit of a tax, or as the economists call it, economic rent. They're really not doing anything. They're just taking money from us. It still has lowered transaction costs dramatically. But I don't know. I mean, I'm just guessing, all right? That's pure speculation. I don't know what really went behind the doors in the Securities and Exchange Commission. But they don't talk about it anymore. So think about that. Just realize, yes, you are being charged. The more you trade, the more you're being charged, which is yet another reason why we're going to ballyhoo. We're going to encourage you to think in terms of long term, you know, holding a stock for 3 to 5 or more years, not 3 to 5 days or minutes. Yes. 44, round lots versus odd lots. Well, again, technology has made this this basically anachronism, and means, you know, you don't have to worry about it anymore. It used to be that the traders on Wall Street, the brokers and the dealers and the exchanges, they wanted you to buy in round lots. That meant anything with 100 shares, 200 shares, 300 shares. And there was a reason for this that you may be interested in. I'll really quickly describe it. If you traded an odd lot, they were going to hit you with an extra, what's called the odd lot differential. They were going to hit you with an extra 12 and a half cents. Yeah, that's because stocks used to be traded in eighths of a dollar. Figure that one out. No more. Now it's usually less than a penny, folks, so don't worry about it. But this is all history, folks, because it's all electronic now. But the two brokers would be on the floor yelling at one another, and one would grab the air with his hand and pull his hand toward him, making a gesture. You can't see me, but I'm doing it. Making a gesture, moving his hand toward him, and he'd say, 25! What did that mean? Well, they were in the pit for IBM or GE or whatever, and that meant I have a client that wants to buy 100 shares at $25 a share. If he or she said 2 at 25 while moving the hand toward him, that meant they wanted to buy 200 shares, two round lots. And of course, when they wanted to sell, they would move their hand away from their chest. They would put their hand towards their chest and move it away. I want to sell. So 25, I'll sell 25 shares at, I'll sell 100 shares at $25 a share. Now, what happens when there's an odd lot or a mixed lot? They would say 17 shares at 25. So you see, we just slow down the trading. So they charge you an extra, you know, 12 and a half cents or whatever because it was an odd lot. But that's all gone now, so don't worry about it. But you still should know about it, if only because some people are going to say to you, I think I told you should only buy 100 shares. No, that's old news. That's old history. You can buy 17 shares or 3 shares or 1 share if you really wanted to. You don't have to worry about buying 100 shares. So that's the only reason we even include that, because you, as the investment guru, have to be able to tell your friends, no, don't worry about that anymore. That's old history. Now, where do you get your information? Well, different sources will contain some, all, or more of these statistics, and we'll discuss these as we go along, so don't worry about them right now. We're going to do some worksheets, and then we're going to do a lot more when we get to Chapter 4. But always remember that the quoted prices are not the only prices available. At any one time, there are many prices available from many different dealers and market makers on the exchanges or on the NASDAQ or the OTC. The quoted prices are just the best prices available. Plus, unless you pay extra, or maybe your brokerage firm, you join a brokerage firm that gives you the up-to-date, you're seeing the prices 15 minutes ago or 20 minutes ago. You're not seeing the current prices. If you go to the brokerage firm and, you know, talk to your broker and buy the shares there, they'll show you, oh, yeah, these are the current prices right now. And it changes so darn fast, folks. It's just, we put in this was a long time ago, too, a trade for a strange number of shares, like 187 or something like that. And so I'm watching as we put the trade in, and I'm watching the trades just fly by, and boom, I saw it fly by. It was really, really quick. And we got him a good price, as I remember. Yeah. So that's that. So this is the information you're going to see. We're going to see a whole lot more as we go along. Now, where? Well, I still use finance.yahoo.com. It used to be the best free finance website, but they've really dumbed it down, so to speak, or they've really taken away a lot of its utility. But it's still actually a pretty good website. Google's website is actually not that great. In fact, that's one of the things they said way back when they went public. They would really not have a very good finance website. And I don't know why they did that, because, you know, pretty much what Google does, they do a pretty good job of it, in my humble opinion. And so, but I do use it a little bit, finance. Now, these other three, Bloomberg, a lot of other brokers, too, tell me they love Bloomberg. I think it's okay. I don't want to pay for it. You know, I think it's not worth. But you might decide that it's pretty good. And now all these, except for Google's, they all use the freemium model. What does that mean? Well, that means they'll give you some stuff for free, but they want you to sign up for their paid website. MarketWatch is owned by Wall Street Journal. And what they did initially is Wall Street Journal was totally paywall. Totally, you had to pay. Whereas MarketWatch was totally free. Well, now they've sort of both gone to the middle. Wall Street Journal will give you some stuff online for free, but they want you to sign up. And MarketWatch is the same thing now. They use the freemium model. They'll give you a lot of stuff for free, but they want you to sign up for their paid version. And Morningstar is notorious for this. If you've done any of the work on Chapter 2 using Morningstar, you know that within a few minutes you're going to get hammered for, hey, sign up for $20 a month or $50 a month or whatever. You deserve it. You whatever. Who else? Some people tell me they like Big Charts. In fact, I saw a presentation where they used one of the tools that Big Charts have, and I was impressed. I don't really use it. I should play with it a little bit more. But you know the best place? You know the best place? The library. I know those librarians look pretty nasty and cruel and mean and dour. Dour. But no, they're very powerful people, folks. The librarians are your friends. So check out the library. And when we're going to check out the library is when we work with the Value Line. That's another place that used to be totally pay. But now they'll give you some stuff for free. But we'll deal with the Value Line in detail in the next chapter, because it is the most awesome resource, in my humble opinion. Morningstar is trying to become another Value Line, and we'll see if they succeed with that. Okay, so now, in the face-to-face class, we would now take a look at these. What you're going to do is you're going to go to the presentation that shows you how to use Yahoo, and I forget who else, probably just go to a few others at the same time. But you're going to find the one that you like the best, and you'll use it. And of course, if you do have a brokerage account, they're going to have their own systems. Schwab has just purchased, well, actually, it was a year and a half ago, TD Ameritrade, which has a very powerful system called Think or Swim. You like that? Think or Swim. And is that right? Yeah, Think or Swim. And I have at least one ex-student who that's what he uses. He thinks that's the best. So you can get a Schwab. I don't know what Robinhood. Stay away from Robinhood. And of course, they have their own system also. So we'll learn how to do this and we'll play with it. And you will hopefully get hooked on investigating, researching, and having fun with companies, stocks. Cool? Okay, excellent. Thank you so much for being in our class, dear students. We are so proud of you. Think about how much you are learning. We have a long way to go. See you in our next presentation.